This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I'm Wang Xiaoning, and this is the Breakfast Grill. Now, who do we call when the country faces an economic crisis? Well, since 1997, it's been the Economic Action Council, or the EAC. Now, this COVID-19 pandemic is no different, and since March, it has been revived with new members that includes leading corporate figures and key government officials, including our finance and prime minister. So to tell us the role the EAC has been playing in our economic recovery plans, we have on the line with us its executive director, Professor Tan Sri Dr. Noor Azlan Ghazali. Thank you for joining us this morning. I think we should just start with the Economic Action Council. Who decided on the appointment of the 13 members? Because when I look at the names, it's a list consisting mainly of like corporate leaders, successful entrepreneurs. But I want to know who speaks for the ordinary rakyat, the ones who are actually feeling, you know, the full brunt of this COVID-19 pandemic.
Let me just explain a little bit about some institutional side of the EAC. You rightly mentioned that we first heard of this back in 1997-98 economic crisis, where then there is a National Economic Action Council, NEAC. And then it evolved. Economic Council during Tun Abdullah and Datuk Seri Najib. And then now it became Economic Action Council. I believe that the fact that the way it names to be Action Council, more is that to attend the immediate situation and crisis in general that we are facing.
But like I asked, because it consists of corporate leaders and successful entrepreneurs, yes. I just want to know who speaks for the ordinary man. Because they are the ones that are feeling the brunt of this COVID-19. Is there the risk that the EAC then sides too much with big business since the members are actually skewed in that way?
Yeah. No, not exactly. That is where to get the Economic Action Council running, the secretariat is formed. This is a joint secretariat between EPU, Economic Planning Unit, and also the Ministry of Finance. That is the role that we are taking. I mean, as a secretariat, we are kind of the mediating units in between of the council. The council meet every week, generally on Friday morning. But in between council meeting, weekly council meeting, myself and my team, my office, basically doing the kind of all the engagement. And we engage at least every day. There are 4 or 5 engagement being done with various groupings, representative of industries as well as public at large on the ground who are voicing their concerns. So we, the secretariat, basically doing the engagement, narrow down to the issues, polish it up so that when we leave it up to the council, it become very focused, very concise, and problems are being clarified in full for the members to deliberate.
And may I know, what kind of role did the EAC have in each of the stimulus packages that been announced? How much input did you all actually have?
So weekly, as I mentioned, that we lift up issues to the council, but simultaneously, Ministry of Finance is the one that taking lead in the preparation of the stimulus as well as on the Penjana recovery plan. So basically, we channel our inputs, we have discussion with them, and both on our side as well as on the Ministry of Finance are conducting hundreds of sessions, engaging with different groups of stakeholders of Malaysia. And this is how things get up and then finally being narrowed down. And the cabinet basically approved the recovery plan, and then it is being announced.
Now, I want to focus on the most recent package, which is the Penjana package. Now, one of the main thrusts is to keep as many Malaysians employed as possible. Now, we know unemployment may rise as much as 5.5% for 2020. Now, some of the measures announced last Friday include a 3-month extension of the pre-Hartin program. But honestly, Tan Sri, if you're a business that is about to go bust and you have just no cash flow, this is not going to keep you going. I mean, $600 is maybe not enough. Do you think when you consider some of the other packages that have been offered in other countries, like, for example, UK, paying 80% of salaries, or even in Singapore, up to 75%?
Yeah, I think if, I mean, we have to look at it, I mean, to be rightly balanced. I mean, of course, it all finally boils down to what that the government can afford in terms of the fiscal space that we have. But bear in mind that there are some of the packages are direct monetary support. Some of them are in the form of waivers of certain statutory payments and tax incentives. There are also something which probably not in the monetary or in terms of waivers, but more facilitations. I will say like this. I mean, of course, we heard of countries, mostly are very kind of rich countries that are announcing, you know, point blank, like 75% of salary, things like that. So in the case of Malaysia, we have limitation. Let's admit that. We all know the status of the fiscal status of the government. We have some capabilities, but we do not have that so-called the luxuries of just injecting cash into the economy. But still, if you look at it carefully, that we have been so far, for example, that if I may share on the wage subsidy programs, right? Latest that I have, for example, about 309 employers as benefiting from this program that reached to about 2.5 million workers. You know, I mean, that was up till 8th of June. First and foremost is to look at the most vulnerable. I think that's a sequence that we are looking at. First and foremost is the household, the individuals, rakyat Malaysia. And then we look into more small and medium enterprises, which is definitely more vulnerable. Are facing probably one of the hardest hit by the crisis, by the nature that they're being small, probably having limited resources to face this crisis. But at the same time, there are packages that goes to the large companies as well. So basically that we are trying to, I would say, to optimize the resources that we have so that it's spread out.
Okay, then let's pivot to the business side of the Benjana package, right? Because what we have seen is that we do know that certain sectors were favoured. For example, the property sector. So lots of goodies here. You know, there was announcements of exemption from real property gains tax for residential houses till year end, an extension of the home ownership campaign, and even the removal of the 70% loan margin on third homes. But do you think this actually favours the buyers or the developers? Because, you know, one common complaint that we hear all the time, and even this is pre-COVID, is affordability. So we believe in market forces, then by right, if there was no intervention, prices should ideally adjust downwards. So in this case, isn't it the developers who stand to benefit rather than the rakyat?
First of all, let us get a common standing on the crisis that we are facing. This crisis is actually an economy-wide crisis. It hits the rakyat, the small businesses, developers, farmers, you know, those taxi drivers, and all the way to even large multinationals who are, you know, involved in the global supply chain and so on. So no one is pretty much, I would say that no one is, able to escape from the crisis. That is a broad kind of understanding that we need to understand that. So when we look at the kind of supports and injections, we must try our best to optimize, looking at the target and see how much gain that we can get out of the supports that we provide.
Which is true, because you want it to have the maximum multiplier effect, right, for the benefit of the economy. Which it goes back to the question, why the property sector, for example? Or even for that, you know, why plantations or auto sector? These were particularly singled out. And for property, which is linked to construction and plantation, ironically, these are the sectors which are most dependent on foreign labour.
Okay, let us, I mean, we had to attend problem one problem at a time. We cannot do all at the same time. Now, construction sector economically has the largest multiplier, and the supply chain of property sector is probably the longest in all that it covers. It go across all the way into various other sectors. For example, that before you see a building being raised, actually there's a lot of involvement of professionals, right? The consultants, the architects, the land surveyors, the suppliers of materials, the workers, and so on and so on. So you must understand that injection in construction sector in such nature, if we are able to generate and push the sector to be activated the fastest possible, the impact will cross through all other sectors. Construction sectors are very involved in with the financial sector, with you know, as I mentioned, all the workers and so on. But let me also highlight to you here that, because I like to share some of interesting data that I have and that would be meaningful to many. When we look at the, in terms of employment, the three largest sectors that will hit the most is definitely tourism related. I mean, that itself, about 42% of the loss of employment come from tourism related sectors. And then we have manufacturing, number two, at 22%. And thirdly, in terms of employment in the construction sectors. So these are the priority sectors, but it depends. For example, like while tourism is badly hurt, but the nature of business, the nature of crisis that we are facing does not allow us to go full force in tourism sector. You know, but still, if you look in Penjana, the domestic tourism sector is now being prioritized. There's nothing much you can do from the perspective of international tourism yet. And so again, I mean, we are not singling out like a particular player, like you mentioned about the developers and things like that. We are looking at the sector-wide as well as the economy-wide. So therefore, this will stimulate, I mean, the third pillars of Penjana is to stimulate the economy. And this is one of the reasons why these are the sectors.
You're listening to The Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking to Professor Tan Sri Dr. Noor Azlan Ghazali, Executive Director of the Economic Action Council. Up next is the country seizing the opportunity created by the COVID-19 pandemic to implement real structural reform. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking to Professor Tan Sri Dr. Noor Azlan Ghazali, Executive Director of the Economic Action Council. Just a moment ago, we were talking about the relevance of the EAC and what role did it play in formulating the Penjana Recovery Package. Now, Tan Sri, we talked very much about the sectors earlier on, and I want to keep that conversation going about stimulating the economy, which is the final trust, the third trust. Now, one interesting thing is this emphasis in attracting foreign direct investment. So I see the government has provided for a 0% tax rate for 10 years for new investments in the manufacturing sector with a capital of between 300 to 500 million ringgit. And if you invest beyond half a billion, the period is extended to 15 years. So it's very generous. But does it come with any conditions?
There are specific time frame given. For example, that once you are approved, you have to spend within a year. You have to start basically the to realize the investment within a year. And the total amount that you commit must be spent within 3 years after that. So meaning that, again, that there is something that clause there that requires a more serious commitment in order for you to gain from the benefit. Similarly, with respect to relocations of manufacturing and all these facilities, right? I mean, they have to do it between July 2020 all the way to December 2021. So all these, there are windows that come along with it. What we want now is commitment and to realize the actual commitment within the fastest possible. Only then you can benefit from this clause.
But Tan Sri, my concern is that aren't we back to square one, you know, where there is the possibility that we end up as a manufacturing hub because of the cheap labour, which in our case is foreign workers. And I'm sure you've read the academic studies, even by Bank Negara as recently as 2018, that talks about our reliance on foreign workers, which actually deters productivity and also then depresses the pay of Malaysians. So is there that concern there?
Yeah, I mean, these the one that you mentioned, I mean, let's admit that we do have structural issues in the country. With or without COVID, these structural impediments are already there in the country. We talk about, whether are we doing high-end complex activities. We are talking about capabilities of talents in the country, the quality of education. We also talk about, you know, the influx of foreign workforce. So, yes, you are right. To me, this COVID basically create this what we call as a COVID push. These are not triggered by COVID, but the urgency of attending all these is now being pushed by the situation that we are facing. So I heard a couple of times, I mean, that Prime Minister himself mentioning about for us to make sure that we are we while attending recovery, we also want to make sure that we take this opportunity to reforms. Honestly, recovery without reform will not give a lasting impact for Malaysia. I mean, in fact, for the benefits of the audience, while there is a recovery plan, the Penjana was released, there will be another medium-term and longer-term plan that are looking at structural issues that are undertaken by the secretariat at the office that I'm heading now. So these are looking into structural. The first on the item, for example, in terms of preparing future workforce. We heard about all these situations that requires us to speed up our digitizations of our economy. So all these come together should be able to attend the over-reliance on foreign workforce. And also that when we are bringing investment to the country, there is a discussion being forwarded by Ben Negara and the study of the World Bank to look to make sure that our investment are not just mere looking at dollars and cents, the scale per se. We must have properly weighed them down along a couple of aspirations, our national investment aspirations. For example, that we would like to have a more complex activities, investment that are pushing for a high-skilled workforce, high-paying jobs, investment that will create strength in terms of our clusters, that will have strong linkages to the domestic vendors and so on. So we, from now onward, we have to be very selective in terms of our investment. While we want to speed it up, but it does not mean that things that goes against our long-term aspirations.
That's right. This is actually, let's admit it, it's a race, right? It's a race between us and our neighbors to attract this FDI. But then they too are also suffering from the effects of COVID-19, and they're going to also roll out their very attractive incentives and tax packages. So what are we going to do different this time in this post-COVID era? Because if anything, foreign investors like certainty. And we've had a recent change in government and also changes in top posts at important government institutions. So how do we balance this conversation with the foreign investors?
Yeah, I mean, you know, all of us, we are fully aware that for the last few years, one of the so-called uncertainty in Malaysia is the stability of the government. I mean, be it wherever you are in the world, one of the first and foremost important criteria in attracting investment is political stability, economic stability, policy certainty. So we need to, you know, put this on the prime list of ours, especially with respect to investors. Policy certainty, I think these are very critical. That's why to make sure that the government are stabilized, I believe that since the first day of this government that running the country now, interesting. I mean, if you look at it over the last so-called about, 100 days now, I mean, we surprisingly, we see a little bit of situation which is more calm than before, politically as well as economically. So that allows the Prime Minister and the rest of the decision makers to proceed a lot faster. In the recent Penjana, for example, there's a new kind of unit, the Project Acceleration and Coordination Unit, PACU, at MIDA was established. And this is to tackle in terms of the speed of decision. So speed matters, certainty matters, stability matters, and all this has to come together to make Malaysia as an attractive location for the new investment. But I like to caution here that we are not supposed to accept any kind of investment. We must make sure that while bringing investment, these are the kind of investment that will take Malaysia forward in terms of our economic advancement and also to tackle some of other structural challenges that we have been facing for quite some time.
But some would say we haven't had that necessary check and balance either, right, when it comes to any of the fiscal packages, because yes, Parliament managed to sit for that one day, but nothing on the COVID-19 packages was actually discussed. And coming up, there is this question about a possible COVID-19 bill. Is that something your EAC is pushing forward?
Yeah, I mean, this having this COVID-19 bill has been raised by almost, I would say, all sectors. One of the most important aspects of it is in terms of the contractual obligations that in between private to private as well as private to government. But of course, these are something that has to be detailed out by the AG Chambers to look into the legal aspect of it in terms of assignment of liabilities and also in terms of, the rest of potential other implications. So various sectors raise this, and I'm glad that government put it strongly that COVID-19 bill will be tabled the soonest. But that is definitely one of the important measures to assure that post-COVID court cases and bankruptcies and things of this nature can be attended rightly. You know, businesses, I've never seen a situation like this where government has have to stop the economy in a way. I mean, have to lessen economic activities to tackle the COVID pandemic. So now is the time for us to restart, and elements that matters to speeding up the restarting process and also to continue that with to revitalize and to reform, transform the economy toward a longer-term objective of the country.
On that note, thank you for your time, Tan Sri. Joining me on The Breakfast Grill today was Professor Tan Sri Dr. Noor Azlan Ghazali, Executive Director of the Economic Action Council. I'm Wong Xiaoning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.